Higher education is an investment. Everybody knows that. It's about the future, but the decisions have to be made now. Where should Alaska's higher education system be headed? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. This program has had an ongoing tradition of connecting Alaskans with the president of the University of Alaska, and we continue that today. The number to talk with Patrick Gamble, 1-800-478-8255. That's 478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk at alaskapublic.org. The university, the subject on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by Providence Imaging Center with Drs. Scott Nespinski and Christopher Reed, providing interpretations of imaging studies with a focus on musculoskeletal radiology, provimaging.com. A PFD reminder, check the status of your 2013 PFD application with My PFD Info online at pfd.alaska.gov. You can view or change your voluntary deductions until Saturday, August 31st. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
I remember we started a project on this show called AK at 100, in which we looked at Alaska's 50th anniversary, 50 years of statehood, and we asked our listeners to envision where they would like to see Alaska in another 50 years. What would Alaska at 100 look like? And the whole idea ran out of gas because people just don't think that far ahead. It's pretty much as simple as that. But one person who sort of has that responsibility is the president of the University of Alaska system, and he's with us today, Patrick Gamble. Pat, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you, Steve. Glad to be here.
I don't know if you really look 50 years ahead or not, but I'm sure you have to look like 5 or 6 years ahead.
Well, actually, you caught me a little off guard when you started talking like that, because we just had a conversation the other day, the chancellors and myself. And we all agreed that, you know, the day-in, day-out busyness is such that we have not sat down in a long time without phones and without interruptions and without staff and just talked about what seeds do we need to plant today for the next. We were looking at 10 to 15 years. 50 is a stretch. If you look back 50 at everything that's happened in the last 50 years and then try to project that forward, it's almost impossible to try to figure out where this world, much less Alaska, is going to be. But certainly 10 to 12 years is where we need to be looking for the university system. And so we scheduled a date where we're going to spend a half a day, and that's all we're going to talk about. So you're right on in terms of that's our responsibility. Do we do it that often? You're also right on. No, we don't. Because of the day-in, day-out activities.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a huge system, and it's a diverse system. There's probably nothing quite like it any place else in the country, maybe the world, because you have the system of the rural campuses. You have a concentration on distance education. You have essentially a very small population base, and you have all these career needs that are always changing in the state. Like, when did we start hearing, like maybe about 15 years ago, that our whole workforce from the pipeline boom is all retiring out? And they now pretty much have retired out. And we weren't training people for those careers because the university system wasn't really geared for that. So industry tried to chip in, and we got, you know, we moved forward on that some. We've moved forward on aviation. You know, I think Ted Stevens saw to it to make sure that we started emphasizing education, aviation. But it seems that to get programs up to the size that you can actually support a graduate program, that seems to be the real hump.
Well, we like to say that Alaska's university system is for Alaskans first. It's interesting in the university business. When you look in the mirror as a university, you've really got to understand real well what what am I? What do I see there? And am I comfortable with that? What kind of university am I trying to be? We're not trying to compete with the big four-year public universities in the Midwest or the private universities on the East Coast. We're for Alaska needs first. And as you pointed out, Alaska needs predominate throughout the workforce. And you can throw in mining and fisheries, for example, in that group you mentioned, or healthcare, big in Alaska. Small population base, very true. So how do we fix that system in place to meet those needs in addition to the traditional needs like baccalaureate degrees of many different types and then graduate degrees? And then you've got to have the resources to try to cover all that. And right now, resources are kind of tight through the state. The objectives right now are to bring in flat budgets while we decide how we're going to do our resource development. Until we can get that sorted out, we're probably going to be on a fairly tight string with regard to resources.
Well, still, I think if you stack Alaska's system up against other states, you know, we probably are in better shape than a lot of state universities now, just in terms of being able to balance our budget at all.
I have absolutely no complaints and only compliments to the legislature, to the governor, who have made that exactly as you've said it. We are the number one state with regard to state support for higher education. Now, I'm not talking about student support grants and those kinds of things. I'm talking about the state paying the bills for its higher education system. We're number one in the country, which is exactly where we'd like to remain. Because a lot of those big universities in the lower 48 had 10, 15, 20, 30% cuts, and not only 1 year, but 2 years and 3 years in a row, where their states just simply stopped supporting them. And that has not happened in Alaska, and we're very appreciative of the trust that's been put in our hands to be able to take the dollars that we get and use them to the best of our ability.
We're speaking with Pat Gamble, president of the University of Alaska. He's in our studios live and ready to talk with you at 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. Whether it's serving the bush, whether it's career education versus education for research, wherever you want to take it, or maybe tuition. Maybe tuition rates would be a good place to take it. In fact, I think I'll take it there right now. Our email is talk@alaskapublic.org. And if you're in Anchorage, you don't have to use the toll-free number of 1-800-478-8255. You can just call locally at 550-8422 because we're right down the street. So when you came in, which has been, what, like three years, you changed the philosophy on tuition increases. I noticed that right away because the student body was not happy with with the way the university was always wanting to raise tuition. And you still are raising tuition, but just not as much.
It's a relative thing. You know, we have probably the third or fourth lowest public four-year college tuition in the entire country. But that's really not the issue to the students who are trying to make it through a four-year program. It's very expensive. It's relative to where you are in the United States, but it's still, when you add cost to those programs, it has to come from someplace, and it's expensive. And so the philosophy change that I used was the idea that instead of independently coming up with a number that represents the tuition increase for the coming year, what I wanted our staff to do is go through the entire budget more on a zero-based type approach, where you build it from the ground floor up and look at what we can do internally to provide efficiencies, save money, reduce programs, take the offset dollars and apply them to other priorities. Do all those things first, build the budget, and then decide what part of this should come from tuition. And in other words, tuition's the last thing we look at, not the first thing we look at. And that's been a big philosophical change. And as a result, we have, especially last year, kept the numbers down. We're going to continue to try to do that, and we're going to continue to try to make up for that internally rather than go to the legislature and just simply ask for more money. That's just not in the cards anymore.
Are you happy with your job? Do you like it?
I love coming to work every day. It's never the same.
Really? To what degree do the chancellors have an autonomy? Maybe you can outline how that happens, because we have such different systems, really.
Well, you know, if you look at any leadership style, I think you'll find a lot of differences. Mine happens to be those three racehorses. They need to be able to run, and they need a light touch on the reins. They don't need a lot of drag. We've got three good ones. They get along well. They sit down. They like each other's company. They work well. They cooperate, and they collaborate well. And I don't need a whole lot of energy to make that happen. They realize the importance of that by themselves. They're bright, and they're good leaders. And so what I do is try to work with my board and make sure we've got the policy right, and then let them execute the policy through the regulation process. And I stay off the reins on that as much as possible.
So you have a planning process. You talked a little bit about really looking into the future, but you do have this brochure I've been handed called Shaping Alaska's Future. Maybe you could talk a little bit about what that is as compared to what the way things have been.
Well, the way things have been and what typically happens in an, not just universities, but business organizations too. New guy comes in, takes a look around, says the strategic plan is old and no good. Let's do a new one. You spend 2 years getting everybody fired up and you build this great big plan. You trot it out with a lot of ceremony. It goes on the shelf and you go back to doing everything the way you did it. We saw very early.
That's why the first thing you do is move the furniture around. Go ahead.
So we rejected that model pretty early on because that just didn't seem to fit what we were trying to do. We're trying to maintain the relevancy of the university in what is a really dynamic higher education debate that's going on across the entire nation. We don't want to break trail in that debate. We don't want to be the laggards at the tail end. We need to find our place, but we need to do it as Alaska's university for Alaskans first. So what we decided we needed was a kind of a change in direction as we move into the future, away from a few of the priorities that had been in the past, such as the priority had been getting more Alaskan students in the door to stay in Alaska and go to the university. Mark Hamilton and his folks at that time did a good job of doing that.
That scholarship program worked great.
It did. And we went from 60% of our kids going outside to 40% staying here, and we flipped that up right around. It's now 40-60. So what we decided that the next priority we needed to do was make sure that those kids who, those students, because they're not all kids by a long shot, those students now, we want to make sure that their success rates at achieving what they're coming to school for are improving, and they were rather flat. So our emphasis is on outputs now and student success, whether it's for a certificate, a two-year degree, four-year degree, or whatever.
Yeah, that's the problem I've heard, I guess, especially in Anchorage, is that people take forever to get out of college.
We have the highest percentage, I think, in the country. I think it'd be fair to say, of what some people call the non-traditional student. You know, the four-and-go student comes out of high school, and you look at 4 years, get out, and go into the workforce. Well, the majority of our students are not in that category. The majority of our students are already out there in the workforce someplace, and they're coming back to us to try to get to the next level. So that's Alaska's university's problem, is to deal with that, and you almost have to custom-make the programs to do that. That's what our initiative is about, and we've been at it now for 2 years.
And involving the private sector, how?
Going out to the private sector, we did more than 80 outreach meetings all across Alaska. We asked those in the private sector, as well as everybody inside and outside the university that we could find, practically every group, what are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? What would you like us to change to better fit what Alaska needs? And we did that first before we started any of the rest of the program. And we came up with five themes, and theme number three is actually a better relationship with business enterprises across the state.
I guess it almost has to be. You know, what excites me, for reasons I'm not sure, just seems exciting, is when there's actual real entrepreneurship at the university, and some club or something comes up with a project and actually turns it into a business that somebody makes money with. And this is happening now. I've watched this.
We have an organization, both at UAF and UAA, both stood up an organization to capture entrepreneurship, to commercialize ideas that come out of professors and students and staff, members of the university. Those started up about a year ago. We have, in one of the two organizations, they've come out with 25 different ideas, if you will, that are inventions. You could call them inventions if you want to. And the other one has 32 in just a year alone, and a number of patents that have been applied for, and one business startup already, and the program isn't even 2 years old. So we're going down that path too.
How does it work? And I've heard this intellectual property issue. What belongs to the university? What belongs to the shareholders of the business?
The shareholders get a share. The idea that everything belongs to the university was one of the things that was actually inhibiting the notion that we could go forward with these organizations. These organizations look like a business. They're very much set up like a business, and they can get a share depending on the nature of what they've got to present.
We're speaking with Pat Gamble, president of the University of Alaska, and it's been pretty broad so far. I expect it's going to get a little bit more specific. I've got some queries coming in by email at talk@alaskapublic.org and by phone at 1-800-478-8255. If you'd like to join us that way, you're welcome. It's a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. And Dave joins the program from Bethel. Dave, you're on Talk of Alaska with Pat Gamble.
Good morning, Steve and Dr. Gamble. This is Dave from Bethel.
How do you do, Dave? How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm an old man, but having a bonus day, I'm breathing.
Amen.
And Dr. Gamble, we the citizens of Bethel need to join hands for fully funding of all education that begins with preschool, Head Start, all the way through higher education and doctorate degrees at the University of Alaska. And if we stick together as citizens of this great state, we can encourage our government to fully fund education. Our children are our future, and they need education to survive the harsh conditions that we live with. I'm concerned about Senate Bill 21 and the lack of full funding for all levels of education. That's my comment. How can we join together to encourage our government, our state government, to fully fund education? Thank you, sir. Thank you, Steve.
Well, Dave, are you going to hang up now? Gonna stay on. Are you going to stay on or hang up?
Either way.
Okay, why don't you stay on?
I'm talking.
Okay, Dr. Gamble?
Dave, you sound like a man who's thought this through and have a lot of experience with looking at the results of good education and maybe even bad education. So there's nothing that you've said that I don't think anybody would disagree with. But I think the point that you make, that because you talked about all the way through, you know, from pre-kindergarten all the way up through PhDs, you realize that education is a continuum. And if any piece of that continuum is broken and split apart, then the system breaks down, because whatever doesn't get past that break in the continuum isn't ready for the next level. And what we're finding in a lot of cases is the continuum is broken in different places, and the students go to the next level and they're not prepared, and then they start to fail. And that's really the thing we're working on the hardest right now with the K through 12 world. We realize at the university, we can't just do everything in 4 years or 5 years. We've got to start early as well. And that's the point that you make, and we certainly agree with you.
Thank you for those comments. I am a former educator. I taught at Little Diomede in 50 to 53. And King Island, 53 to 55. And I'm no longer an educator, but I still read a couple hours every night to stimulate my brain. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
I'm very impressed by that King Island. That was some tough duty there. Thank you so much. That was Dave calling in from Bethel, and I think maybe we should bring up maybe the rural Alaska thing. The complaint I've often heard from the far-flung rural campuses is that they tend not to get first pick, that they get the leftovers.
In what sense?
I just hear that. People that attended those campuses and so forth, they feel that they don't really get the priority, that the priority is more going to always Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau.
Well, I think if you go visit those campuses, I'm not sure you'd have the same impression because, first of all, they're the nimblest part of our system. They're the most flexible. They're the closest to our students and to the community at the same time. And when you see what they're able to do and how they're able to hold on to students in a way that's so much more personal than, you know, in the larger campuses, you get a real warm fuzzy that something's going right out there in those community campuses. And they're a very, very important part of what we're doing. For those students who are not fully prepared to take on a four-year degree, for example, our two-year campuses are absolutely essential to hold on to them and work through that period while they build up their confidence, getting some more credits, and getting ready for those more advanced courses. I certainly don't look at them as second-class citizens, and I know the three chancellors that we have right now don't either. So that might be a little bit of the old reputation. But I would argue that today we work real hard. In all fairness also, you know, they, depending on the percentage of Native Alaskans that attend the campus, they're eligible for what's called Title III government subsidy funding. And that Title III money that's come into Alaska has really helped those rural campuses. And they're in many cases, they've got beautiful facilities. And the students are very, very much at home going to school there. So I'm actually pretty pumped up about our rural campuses overall.
Well, it is, nothing stays the same in this business. And so hence we've seen the University of Alaska Anchorage. I was reading the history, and it started with the Eugene Short Building, which I ride by every morning on my way to work. And it's now houses the campus security, and I'm always scared that the ventilation is not real good, and they'll leave the doors open. And one day I'm going to ride my bicycle the shortcut right down the hall. I'll see the doors open both ends and go through there, and I'm going to get busted. Of course, I was going to get into papers. That's it for me. But it was that one building that it started with, and now it's become this huge thing. And it was a community college. And now it's an actual university. It's a graduate program. It's got a huge health program, and so forth. It's a matter of change. It is changing, and it has been changing. But some people are missing the community college aspect of UAA. They say we have to pay all these campus fees. We only want to take one or two courses. They like to get off that hook. That comes from Marge here.
Well, when the community campuses were actually broken out as community campuses and then placed underneath the main campuses, one of the things that was done at that time in order to make it work was that the tuition cost per credit hour for our community campuses was put in at the same rate as the cost per credit hour at the main campuses. If I were king for a day, I would do anything to bring that cost down at the community campuses, because in the e-learning world now, it's the great equalizer. And our students, if they've got the bandwidth, can go online and choose to take those courses at an outside community college, for example, instead of one of our own, to get those credits at a cheaper cost. So two things have to happen to keep that from growing. One, we have to continue to give really good value for the dollar. Excellent courses, excellent professors, excellent instructors. And then two, it's incumbent upon us to try to find a way to separate out the cost of going to the main campuses in a four-year program from the two-year cost at a community campus. That is one of the things that you mentioned earlier, looking into the future. As I see the future, that's one of the goals I'd like to be able to accomplish.
Pat Gamble, how much, what percentage of your job is politics?
Actually, it's seasonal. Starts in about January and kind of ends about May.
Yeah, of course.
And really, the good news is it's a very supportive politics. We do not, because our Board of Regents in Alaska, in the Constitution, has responsibility for making policy for the University of Alaska, unlike other states, where actually the legislators legislate higher education policy, we don't have that here. And so our relationship with our legislators, I consider it excellent. The ones that disagree with us professionally, and we talk about these things, and we work them out. It's not even a love-hate relationship. It's just a good supporting legislature, and the governor and his staff are the same way. So I'm glad to say that politics really isn't a lot of what I have to weave into everything else that I'm doing.
One of the smartest people I have ever met is a graduate of the Colorado School of Mines, land-grant college. And he said to me last year, you know, it won't be long before we're mining the asteroids. I could not believe this guy that knew all this about mining and geology and everything is absolutely convinced we'll be mining asteroids before too long. That's just a future that is hard for me to picture. But he says, look, it's a gravity well. It's going to happen. Once we know what's there, we can pick the one out that we want and go get it.
Think of that. If those asteroids have fish, those guys are in big trouble mining the asteroids.
Very good. But how are we doing on the mining front at the university?
Well, glad you asked. I just had a good conversation this morning. We've got a very active initiative, which we call CAMI, which is the it's a Consolidated Alaska Mining Initiative. We took a look at all the activities across the whole system as part of this SDI initiative related to mining in any and every capacity. And we found out that the right hand and the left hand didn't know what all these things were. So we did an inventory. Then we've had several large-scale meetings with the mining community, with the owners, the managers, mine managers, looking at their future, where we ask them, what are your requirements going to be? What specifically do you need in terms of workforce? What skills? When do you need them? How many do you need in these areas? And we did a gap analysis, and now we're trying to fill in that gap and do it through the workforce development process, where we're focusing now on what they need and when they need it. It's a large-scale effort. It's going very, very well. And we're partnering with the Canadians on this because we have a lot of common interests. And, of course, some of the big mines come out of Canada.
Very interesting. We're speaking with Pat Gamble, president of the University of Alaska, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news on Alaska's business sector, government, and industry since 1985. Information and subscriptions online at akbizmag.com.
It is Talk of Alaska, and we have restored our tradition of having the president of the University of Alaska on the show. Pat Gamble is with us and ready to talk with you, to talk with Alaskans. In fact, he's kind of enthusiastic about the whole idea. So let's see if we can discourage him. Don joins the program from Anchorage. You're on the air with Pat Gamble.
Thank you. No, I don't want to discourage him at all. I love that paradox you gave about money. I think that's terrific. I think that should be applied to education as well. I'd like to give them kudos for to UAA and whatnot for the strides they've made, particularly with their new medical arts building or whatever, among other things. We've needed it for a long time. I've been up here since 68. And one of my biggest gripes I've had about education stems from my own hometown area back in Ohio, where I grew up, where I taught after I came out of the military. That was too often, it's again, similar to what Dr. Campbell said a little bit ago, right hand doesn't seem to know what left hand's doing. In some cases, it stems from parents. We had, for example, no school of law up here in the state of Alaska that has what, 4-year credits, whatever. This is one of the reasons why I was so delighted to see the medical arts building open up over here. Something as simple as law that is used every day on a daily basis for every citizen. And it's not being taught in the schools. We came out back in 1948. The Declaration of Human Rights by the United Nations laid down the law that it was supposed to be taught in every country, in every school. It lasted about 2 years in the United States, and the program got shut down. You try to teach Constitution to people in school, and it's almost as if some of the teachers get scared silly of it. Because, gee, if these kids find out they've got rights, they're going to come in and throttle us. And they're going to throw it up in our face because we're going to lose our authority over them. It's not supposed to work that way. It's supposed to enhance their respect for the law, to be law-abiding citizens, as well as respect each other and stop a lot of things like bullying that's going on, so that you don't need a police officer hovering over you in school to make sure you behave yourself at any school, at any level. I'm not trying to put the cops out of business. I'm not trying to put the lawyers out of business either. I just think it needs to be based a lot more on common sense and our own U.S. Constitution.
So, Don, you're saying the university really needs to have a law program, it sounds like.
I understand there is at least the segments of one going on for like 1 or 2 years credits, but I've been told that there's not a full 4 to 6 year program. Am I wrong?
I see. So what do you think would be the solution? Something like the WAMI program for the medical?
I think that would be a good start.
Okay, well, let's
have something, even if you just brought people in to stir up their interest in it and to show what can be done up here in Alaska instead of having to send everybody out of state.
Yeah, that would be kind of fun to have some of those liberal lawyers coming up here and not defending Bill Sheffield from impeachment and also attacking him for impeachment or involved in the Exxon Valdez oil spill or some huge high-profile case.
I don't know if they still have it or not, but it seems to me there was a program some years ago where they used to bring some of the grade school and high school students in to certain classes and stuff, a little bit like the parents used to do and or still do, I guess, when they bring their kids to work to see what mom and dad do. To let them see how things go and what's available to them, and to more or less let them get a whiff, so to speak, of what would be available to them as far as a career is concerned.
Okay, well, let's let Pat Gamble take a crack at that one, Don.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Don, thanks for your comments. with regard to the law school, you know, some of the bigger programs like vet schools and medical schools and law schools, they're an evolutionary kind of thing where there's a demand that grows and grows to the point where the university in its maturing and growth makes a very, very strategic decision to start off in the direction of one of those major schools. So far in Alaska, we have elected, because of the size of the state and the number of students and the demand, we've elected to partner with other schools. For example, our vet school partnership is just starting up with Colorado State. We won't have a vet school inside Alaska, but we will have courses and we'll have work for students that'll be combined with the courses and work that they would get out of Colorado State. Likewise, our doctors, same thing with the University of Washington. We have not done that with a law school yet. And one of the reasons is, as you probably have noticed in your reading, we've got a lot of lawyers and they're spending a lot of money to get educated at some pretty high-powered law schools and coming out with huge debt and unable to find jobs. And so we're right now not being pressed to partner with anybody to any great extent, because the market out there right now is slack for lawyers. The idea of actually building a law school inside Alaska has been brought up. A lot of smart people have looked at it. And right now, the financial climate probably just would not allow it. There are certain credentials a law school has to have. You have to have your own separate law library and so on and so forth, which we could not meet in today's financing. So the law school idea right now is certainly lagging medical and veterinary, but it is always talked about. There's always someone who is looking forward to that next step and getting us into the business of law. I think if the national market were to change, and that may happen over the next several years, who knows, and as Alaska grows and the university grows, eventually we could see it come to pass.
Could I add one more thing?
You betcha, Don.
I have also had some experience working with the poor, people who dropped out of school. In some cases, people were incarcerated. I also happen to know that when it comes to building a law library, quite often attorneys who retire, move out of state, judges and people who get a lot of their books and stuff renewed, and rather than discard the old ones, they would donate them to other organizations. For example, I understand a number of the books and stuff that have gone into some of our prison law libraries have come from retired judges and people who maybe went back to the states, whatever. I am not a paralegal. I am aware of some paralegal courses such as Blackstone and a few others. I also understand that in those courses, ironically, the last chapter they teach is U.S. Constitution, when you would think it would be the first chapter they would teach.
Don, you are so eloquent, and that's absolutely, your thoughts are absolutely beautiful. I want to thank you so much for your call.
Thank you, sir.
All right, let's go to Brian, joins the program from Eagle River. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Pat Gamble, Brian.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Morning, Brian.
Yeah, I just I had two questions that are, both of them are near and dear to my heart. The first one may be pretty simple, but it deals with advanced agricultural techniques. I know there's an agricultural program over in University of Alaska Fairbanks, and last year, they grew their first crop of corn, which is pretty incredible up there, especially considering corn usually need higher root temperatures to pull off a stunt like that. But I've been trying to get into some advanced agriculture down here in UAA, and I've received a lot of support from my professors running my experiments in my garage under some grow lamps. But I was wondering, is there any future in is there any future program we might look at to do where we could start taking technique like advanced agricultural techniques like aquaponics or hydroponics to start growing full farm yields up here? Because I know it's extremely hard to grow up here already.
I want to combine that with this one comes from Sarah, who Pat Gamble, and that is Sarah says, hey, you talked about the university didn't taking a big hit in budget cuts, but cooperative extension and agricultural experiment has been flat for years and is hurting. So maybe we can combine those two and see what Pat Gamble has to say about it, Brian, okay?
All right, sweet. That sounds like a plan.
All righty.
I think the future in agriculture is a combination of what grows uniquely up here, and peonies comes to mind. We sort of discovered that there's a European market out there, and the cost per stem on the market is such that the Alaskan version of peonies, and I'm sure you're familiar with this. I know you obviously have worked with Ag Extension here, but to the listeners, the Alaskan peony is special. It's so special it commands a premium. So those niche opportunities like the peonies, niche opportunities like what we saw coming out of Chena Hot Springs alternative energy discussions this weekend, the annual meeting they had up there, where they were containerizing the growth of vegetables in very much like what you'd see a 50-foot container coming off of the barge or on the back of one of the trains, but inside was contained a vegetable growth process. Whether that can scale up to commercial sizes is a good question. But were it to be done commercially and at profit, that would be a niche that circumpolar north nations and other places outside of Alaska could certainly use. So I think Ag Extension in Alaska, it's not like 10,000 acres of wheat or square miles of corn in the Midwest. I think it's this niche, conserving energy, using the resources that we have, particularly the daylight, that is going to be the exciting part of agriculture up here. We have good production of barley and so on, but transportation costs and so on, as you well know, getting things to market is also a problem.
Well, Extension is very helpful with people that, when you're producing close to where you consume and the gardening and so forth is good. But what our caller, Sue, was pointing out, or our emailer, Sue, was pointing out was the stuff was getting flat funded. And this is the very area that where there's huge demand now.
Believe me, in today's world, flat funding is not a bad thing. 20% cut is a bad thing. Flat funding means the money that you got last year, you're going to get this year. And I'll take that to the bank under circumstances like we find ourselves in today in the state. The secret is that, after 10 or 12 years of steady increase in funding so that we've been able to grow and grow and grow and grow, when you suddenly realize you can't grow because you can't get the money, it looks like we've been cut. And things are really going to get tough, when in fact what we really have to get used to is this leveling off period where we have to sustain ourselves at a certain level until such time as growth is realistic again. And right now is not that time, and that is not just for Ag Extension. That goes across the board. And that's just the unhappy fact of life that we're in right now. But that doesn't mean programs need to be cut. Although I will tell you that across the entire university system, we have over 190 degree programs. We are looking at all our programs to see which ones are still bringing value and which ones are left over from the old days that really don't have much value anymore. And if we're spending money on those are going to get cut, get reduced, get eliminated, so that we can concentrate on the ones where the demand from our students is the highest. We're always going to have a demand for ag extension. I think there is enough of that in Alaska where it may not be going through a growth period right now, but I don't see it as subjected to big cuts.
I think I just heard a guillotine blade slide down there in the middle of Talk of Alaska as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. Check the status of your permanent fund dividend application at pfd.alaska.gov. August 31st is the deadline for contributing to a college savings plan and to add or change charitable contributions. This message sponsored by the state of Alaska.
It's Talk of Alaska. Pat Gamble, president of the University of Alaska, is with us, and he says, flat funding? I'll take flat funding. Let's go to Mark, joins the program from Eagle, Alaska. Mark, welcome to Talk of Alaska with Pat Gamble.
Well, good morning, Steve and Pat. I had a question, sir. It goes to the high cost of tuition. I was curious, does our university system offer challenge exams for various degrees?
You mean to be able to test out?
Just for me to walk in cold, take a test, and walk out with a diploma.
I think that you would probably get different answers to different parts of the university on that. I think in general, yes, that's possible to walk in and take an exam and get credit at certain levels in certain courses, but that doesn't work for every course in every major, especially when you get to advanced courses.
So there would be no challenge exams for degrees then?
Not for an entire degree.
Now, I think you're going to have to deal with it in specifics there, Mark, from there on. I think that's about as far as we could take that question.
Mark, I'll tell you, though, that there is an initiative going on, and it started in the East Coast, where the outcomes-based education at the higher education level is testing exactly what you're asking about. And what they've done is for a certain kind of degree, a general degree, they have determined how many different subjects you need to master to be accredited with enough knowledge to get a degree in this general studies area. And as soon as you test out of, and there's about 100, 110 different subjects, as soon as you test out of those subjects, doesn't matter how long it takes you, could take you 6 months from what I've heard, the minimum time that a person could potentially do this, 6 months, when you're done and you test out, you're done and you get the degree. This is a whole new idea, and it's got a lot of people buzzing about the fact that this really shows learning as opposed to just sitting in a seat for a certain amount of time and then walking across the stage because you made it through 4 years.
Mark?
Well, that's good news, sir. It doesn't make me sound half as crazy as I thought it was. Thank you.
Not at all.
No, I tell you, in Alaska, people do a lot of studying in Alaska on their own. This question from Sue, Pat Gamble. She says, this may have been brought up. No, it wasn't. But how come we don't have a course in how to teach English as a second language? Do you realize there's 90 to 100 languages represented in Anchorage's school district even now? Isn't it about time we had something like that?
Great question, and I'm afraid I don't have enough detail to know if we do or if we don't. If we are not meeting the requirements in our teacher production program to be able to put a well-qualified teacher into an ESL class, then that's something we have to fix. And maybe our caller has actually got some more information on that, and if she does, we'd be glad to take it and look into it if she has a suggestion.
Let's go to Dennis, joins the program from Kodiak. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Pat Gamble.
Hi, guys. Great show. Got juicy. Steve, you're quite the diplomat. Anyway, Yeah, politics, that's definitely, you leave that out, you're not being realistic. Of course, we've got the branch of University of Alaska here in Kodiak. I see it reaping a great reward to many people around. A couple weeks ago, rarely do I hear stories of the danger of technology. And a couple weeks ago, a friend of mine is telling me why his wife is stepping down from a very tenured teacher position, elementary school level, and this curriculum of these computers to every student, and this is the solution, and this is the answer. She saw a price tag. She saw a warning of things going on with that. And because of this great push that this is a mandatory thing, she backed down. She retired. And, I'll keep it short because I'm sure you're short for time. But, that was my inventory subject for your show. Thank you very much.
All right, Dennis. Thank you. Technology.
Well, I hate to see any teacher retire because of something that actually drives them out of the business, especially one that's got years of experience. But I will say to agree with the premise I think that our caller was beginning to make. You know, a computer by itself or an iPad by itself is really nothing. I mean, it's the application. What are you going to do with it? What is it going to bring of value to the learning process that's going to boost you up a notch? And make the application of this piece of technology make you learn faster and make you learn more and better. And if you can't answer that question, then you really have to question the expense. You've got the cart before the horse.
It's a great tool, and sometimes I think we just mostly waste it. You know, we have this huge, huge data processing capacity, and what do we do with it? You know, modeling is probably the most, you know, best used of it. And we use it to stay in touch, but do we stay in touch with anything of significance, or we just pass trivia around all the time?
Well, the kids don't even use computers anymore. Yeah, I mean, no. they're you know, in 140 characters, their whole world exists in that, in some pictures on a phone, in a very small screen. So we're even blowing past the computer phase. Meanwhile, we're trying to get them into the schools, and the kids are down the road, another two or three years ahead of us, saying, "Hey, come on, catch up."
Yeah. It's Pat Gamble is with us, president of the University of Alaska. Telephone number 1-800-478-8255 in our few remaining minutes. Several emails say, hey, wait a minute. Dave from Bethel called him doctor, but I don't think he is. Maybe you can correct that.
Good call. I was trying to be diplomatic and not correct a caller, and I was going to say something at the very end, but I have to admit that I'm a graduate of Texas A&M. I was a math major. Then I became a fighter pilot, and that's a double whammy. An Aggie fighter pilot, that's why I've got a sloped forehead from as many times as I hit it with my hand. But there's plenty of scar tissue up there, so that's how I survive. But no, I'm not a PhD, and probably never came close to what it would take to be one.
You don't have it piled higher and deeper, let me put it that way. Mark chimes in from email saying, well, I'm proud that the University of Alaska is supporting sustainable energy programs at the Mat-Su and Dillingham campuses, plus a building energy efficiency program in Juneau. Energy issues are critical in the long-term health and resilience of Alaska's communities, and efforts to transition, one, to much greater energy efficiency, and two, clean, renewable energy production will be key to both rural and urban community sustainability in that 50-year time frame you started the show with. Yeah, Mark, we are still working our way towards 50 years on that. But it would appear that we can't do enough on energy.
You know, people talk about energy as a financial discussion, and really, it's not a financial discussion. This is where we're going. This is where our society is gonna shift its foundation over to where technology in the energy area is gonna allow us to progress as a society and build better homes, better lifestyle, better opportunities for all of us. I was just yesterday at UAF. We had a couple of visitors from the Department of Energy who came in and looked at our alternative energy laboratory at UAF. And we were hosting them there. And these were two higher-ups in the Department of Energy. And they were just blown away by the research that we were doing that integrates the ability to take a small microgrid and create it out of wind and solar and diesel and hook the three together so that whichever one works the best at that time, at that time of the year, time of the day, that's what's working, and it's powering the village. And it's maintainable and sustainable. And by the way, you can pick it up and move it around. That's where we're going at the university, and that's where the future is going to be in 50 years for 200 villages across Alaska.
Yeah, that's really worth bragging up. Let's try to get Gary in from Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Pat Gamble, Gary.
Yes, good morning, Pat and Steve. Thanks for the show. It's been very educational.
Very funny.
Yeah, I grew up in Fairbanks, and I was in the mining business, mainly peat moss, all my career in the early days. And,
wow!
And as I, so I work with a lot of gardeners. But as I, you know, growing up, the university was a mining university and an ag university, and so my thoughts are to maybe not necessarily reinvent the wheel, but to get into the economics of ag as a college credit or draw the people to market the university, like you look at UC Davis and see what they do as far as it's a big university for ag. And I think, you know, if you can't mine it or grow it, you know, it's a marginal business possibly. But I see the university, it could be a leader in the nation as far as the ag research and economics of agriculture, and then also thinking about organic, the field of that, and as well as you know what the best crops to grow from an economic standpoint of transportation and then marketing to the Asian market. But university can take the lead in that, and then become a real sought after university to go to, particularly in that field.
Yeah, we're not exactly Cornell. Let's give Pat a minute here to answer that.
Well, I think the future in ag, like I said, is not going to be competing with some of the great land-grant colleges that exist across the Midwest and Texas. And I mean, there's some really, really good ones and very, very large-scale efforts that are underway there. I think what's going to be our niche, and especially if we're talking that 50-year discussion, is there's a climate change going on. And that climate change is moving from south to north. It's gonna move through lands where,
gotta wrap it up,
formerly in the wintertime, it was really tough to grow things. And it's going to change Alaska's growth cycle. We need to be at the forefront of figuring that out.
Pat Gamble, I hope you can come back with us.
I'd be happy to, Steve.
And thank you to our tech crew. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. The Federal Subsistence Board is seeking ideas to improve the rural determination process. Only Alaska residents living in rural areas or communities are eligible to harvest fish and wildlife resources on federal public lands under federal subsistence regulations. The deadline to submit your ideas is November the 1st. For more information, call 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority has studied regional population, household, and employment statistics to forecast future traffic and revenue models for the Kinnick Arm Crossing. The authority is updating this data and commissioning an independent peer review of the work that's been completed so far. The results are expected in fall 2013. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.